Welcome to the Moms of Triathlon podcast. I'm Jen Gottschalk, a former college swimmer turned triathlete. I'm an in-house commercial attorney and mama to Maddox, my two-year-old son.
And I'm Amy Henderson, a Cat 1 cyclist with an elite triathlon background and mother of two to Oliver, who is four, and Margo, who is two. This week, we're going to be sharing some fun stories of triathlon lessons we learned the hard way. But first, what's been going on with us this week? Jen, hello.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I am doing pretty well. It's been a good week. How's your week been going?
It's been good. It's been like a whirlwind, I guess, because this week I went to Santa Clara and went into Chegg's headquarters for a few days. And I drove down. I like worked a half day Monday morning, then drove in the afternoon, and then was there and in office on Tuesday. We had a couple other people in from out of town. And then, of course, those that are local. And we went and did like a team dinner for the attorneys that were around that night. And then on Wednesday, I kind of did the same thing I'd done Monday, but in reverse. So I worked like in the morning. I had mostly all meetings and then got on the road. I had planned to maybe work almost a full day in office Wednesday, but Devin was paying attention to the weather and he was like, you should try to time it where you're going to be coming over the pass before dark, I think. And I was like, okay. So I got on the road earlier than planned, but it was nice. You know, being remote, some of my family or friends, even when I was like going to go fully remote, even though like at Ironman, we had worked from home a lot, you know, post pandemic, when I was like actually taking a job fully remote, they were like, are you sure? Because, you know, I'm kind of a people person. I like to socialize and all that. And it does get lonely sometimes being at home, but I also can't imagine in this mom phase of life, like my previous schedule that I had like pre-pandemic, I'm like, I don't understand where I would be fitting it all in. So I'm grateful to be remote. But it's nice like to go in and like see some people in person and all of that. So I did enjoy my time there. But yeah, I woke up Wednesday morning with like no voice, Amy. I don't even fully know why. It's much better today than it was the last 2 days, but it was so weird. So I don't know. I have like a little case of a laryngitis, I guess, or something.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. When you sent that video, I was like, oh yeah, okay. This might be a tricky week to record.
Yeah.
But I am surprised. Like it sounds a lot better today. Yes. How often do you think you'll be going to Chegg in person now that you live in Reno and stuff?
So we have two official legal onsites per year. So I'll always go to those. But that was something we talked about, like being closer, like going in, you know, here and there. And so that's kind of like what this trip was. If I had to guess, I would say I'll probably end up going in minimum of 4 times a year, maybe upwards of 5 or 6 times a year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like this trip was just one of our litigation attorneys was going to be in town for some depositions. And our general counsel reached out to me and was like, if you feel like coming in, you should. Like, we're going to do a dinner with those that are around and like, we'd love to have you. And he's like, you know, interested in having me come more often too, if it makes sense and if it works out.
Yeah.
So I was able to like schedule it with Devin so that he didn't go to Vegas while I was going to be gone. And, you know, it was nice. And we went to one of the best dinners I've ever had in my entire life too on Tuesday. So, I mean, that was pretty worth it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Our general counsel is, like a major foodie. And so loves to pick good restaurants and like, yeah, so that's, you know, always good. But the tricky thing was with the two drives, each taking up about half a work day, and I am feeling like I'm underwater at work right now.
Yeah.
So just kind of had to like really put my head down like yesterday and today to feel a little bit caught up and everything. But yeah, it's go, 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 go. It's like Chegg is no longer, you know, a small company or startup, but I think this probably happens with a lot of tech companies. It's like they're a big established company, but it has that like startup and like go vibe sometimes. And the product's just like always changing. And so just legally, there's always so much work to do, but it's good.
Yeah. I had that same like issue or consideration when, you know, we were moving. I was working at Stanford and then I was staying at the same job, but switching to be remote. And I was really worried about like, how well am I going to be able to focus when I'm not in the office? Like, I really like, you know, being able to turn to someone and talk to them and ask them their opinion or just like that ease of communication. And obviously now we have tools like Slack and stuff. But, you know, I was worried about that. And then at one point in Portland, I was applying for a new job that had an office. And this is when I was like, Ollie was, I don't know, 6 months old or so. No, he was like 4 months old. And I was nursing and everything. And so they had an office. But then even then, I was like, I'm not sure if I could even take this job because getting to and from the office, which was only a couple miles from where we lived, was like, the time that it's going to take and then the breastfeeding and the nursing being away from home and whatever, like it's really a pretty tricky give and take, you know?
It is. And it's so interesting because like right now, you know, my schedule is pretty much like I get up in the morning and then I get Maddox ready and I take him to daycare and I come back and I work. And when my work day is done, I get him and we do our evening until he goes to bed. Right. But I'm like, when in the world, like how in the world pre-baby and pre-pandemic was I waking up, doing a workout, showering, going to work, sometimes working out again at lunch or if not at lunch, again after work and feeding myself and driving to and from an office? Like what? I don't understand how the math doesn't math for me. I don't understand how it was all being fit in. Because I can't even imagine attempting that similar of a schedule right now, you know, like as our listeners know, and have listened to me for the last, you know, however long it's been now that I've been on the podcast, 9 months or so, I've been, you know, working to figure out how to fit in 30 minute workouts and I don't even have a commute anymore. I'm like, how did I do all that?
I know. And Nick and I have been talking about like him trying to, you know, get more exercise in his schedule. And he does. He has two like strength workouts he does each week. He leaves work or he goes to it like on his way to work or something. And it's like a scheduled time. But, you know, he was talking about like his mom putting some pressure on him that he should be working out. And he's like, I tell her like, I don't know. I think it like stresses him out because he's like, I'm already like doing too much. Like, where would I fit it in? And I try to say like, you know, if you're not home for dinner once or twice a week, like that's fine. Like let's find a way. But I know that he feels overwhelmed at the thought. And really it's like, as soon as you don't have, aren't like making space or don't have it in your routine to train or exercise or whatever, it just like, it gets consumed and it feels like that time is gone and is not possible to fit that. Yes. In.
Yeah, I know. And like for a while there, I had felt like, oh, you know, it's harder on the mom and this and that. But then I recently realized I'm like, you know, Devin stopped CrossFitting pretty early into parenthood. And like, that's sad too. Yeah. Like I'm finding ways to sneak in little workouts in our garage gym, but he hasn't made that part of his routine here in Reno yet. And like, I want him to be able to, you know? So we're trying to figure that, I'm trying to help him figure that out because he says he knows what it has to be is that he needs to wake up and do it, but he's never been a morning workout guy his whole life, you know? And so I'm like, well, I could do that too. Like if Maddox's wake up time is pretty reliable at this point, like I could do it, but like, you can't get mad at me if I'm like, okay, come on, let's go.
I know.
Cause I think like, if I got up and did it, it would help him maybe get out of bed. But yeah, we're trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, I know. Like another thing is, well, now that we have Ollie in school, that's, you know, moved our morning time up by an hour or more. So that's, in a way it can be good because if we get to bed early enough and so then we're rested enough when we wake up, like we are getting up earlier. So is there a way? And Nick and I have talked, like, I drop him off at school each day, but he was like, some days I can take him, you know, and just take him on my way to work. And so yeah. It's like, would it make sense ever for him to like drop Ollie and then go to the gym on the way to work? Or, you know, I mentioned we'd been doing the yoga where I'd go and meet with him near his work at a yoga studio. So, which we got to try to do that again before our pass runs out. You know, it was $50 for the pass. And I think we've done two. So if we do one more, then that's like a decent rate.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I really hope you guys can get in one more before your pass runs out, because that would be good. I always think about that when you have a pass, like how much percentage has it equaled?
I know. We might even ask them to extend it because of the week of snow, you know?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Everything was shut down. So yeah, why not ask?
Always worth a try. Yeah. The other one thing I want to say about being gone for part of the week too was that Maddox was like so cute. You know, he's really like aware and like understanding more when like Devin's in Vegas for work or whatever when I'm gone. But the very first night, so Monday night, Devin sent me a video when it was time to like go get ready for bed and do books. And I normally do books with Maddox, and he sent me a video of Maddox crying, and like it was simultaneously so sad, but also so cute. And in the video, he was just saying like, "Mama, all done working. Mama, all done." And I was like, oh my God, this is so sad. And also like, why do I'm like secretly happy that you miss me, because I like love that you miss me, you know, because the feeling is mutual, buddy. But it was just like really cute. But I was also really excited to come home and see him on Wednesday because of that.
Aw, yeah. Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. That makes me think of Margo. She's anytime she sees me like getting my run stuff on or my bike stuff, it's like, no biking. Don't go, Mom. Don't leave.
Just wants to hang out with you. Yeah. So cute. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. But how's your week been, Amy?
Yeah, it's been good. The great thing, I can't even remember if I mentioned this on the podcast, but I was supposed to have jury duty this week.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, like, yeah, luckily like 2 days before I got a text that was like, you've been dismissed, right? Is that the term? And so, yeah, like as it was getting closer, I was definitely getting nervous, because for one, of course, you can't even really park by the courthouse. Like, you know, it's expensive. There's probably not, I don't know, I guess you park in a whatever, and you get paid $10 for a whole day, and then that doesn't even cover your parking cost, right? Yeah. And then so but you don't know when you're gonna be done, right? Like,
right,
I could get a ride if I knew, oh, I'm gonna be there the whole day and Nick can take me home. Except that wouldn't work because someone has to pick up Ollie. So anyway, it was just like,
yeah,
we hadn't really nailed down what our logistics plan was going to be. And no matter what, it was going to be very stressful. And the first day I was supposed to go was supposed to be an orientation. So I was like, that I'll be done by the time it's pickup, right? But otherwise, Nick would have had to probably cancel meetings. And anyway, yeah, whatever. Luckily, I was dismissed. The lack of planning worked out fine. And I felt very good because I was like, I did my civic duty.
Yeah.
I didn't try to get out of it.
We were texting about that, right? Because I was like, oh, I secretly like really badly want to do jury duty.
I know.
And you were saying that you've done it before, or
what? Yeah, because I love jury duty. And yeah. I did it first when I was like 18 in college, like my freshman year.
That's right.
Yeah. And I was on a case and I was voted like the lead juror person.
Yeah, that's
and
awesome.
It was pretty funny because we'd be in the deliberation room. Like, it was really interesting deliberation and stuff. It was a DUI case. And so we were like deliberating, and I feel like people were looking at me like, you should be like managing, or like, you know, managing the discussion more. And I was like, these are all adults. Like, yeah. I'm way, like, I don't know why I put my hand up.
You're like, I can't even drink yet. we're discussing a DUI case. Don't you all?
Right. Yeah.
That's funny.
And then I've had it once in Portland so far. And yeah, normally I love it. Like, just like I love going on planes or stuff like that, I feel like jury duty is that period where like, all I like, no one can reach me right now. I can just do whatever I want. It like feels like this really like freedom from like life, I guess.
That's so funny. But
so then I was feeling very conflicted with kids and the disruption to the actual lifestyle. And I was like, how am I going to fit in workouts if I'm like at jury duty all day and then whatever, you know, like, but then worked out. So that opened up my week, which was great.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask in relation to the ISR swim lessons we've been doing for Margo, right? One of the things that the coach teacher is working on is like, you know, getting her face wet, but then also not like rubbing her eyes and like sort of getting that comfort of like even opening her eyes underwater and, you know, just like your face being wet, right? And so I mentioned to the coach, I was like, oh, like I really struggle with that. Like if my eyes get wet, like I always close them in the water and then like I have to wipe them before I will open my eyes. I do not like opening my eyes if they've had water on them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, it always seems like it's the parents that mention that have the kids who struggle the most. And so I was very curious, like, I mean, how unique is that as a struggle? And do you feel like, how do you feel about that as someone who's been a swimmer too?
Yeah. So that's interesting because when I would teach private lessons, I don't think I ever specifically related it back to the parents or like asked them like, oh, well, what are you like in water? But a question I sometimes did ask is how did you bathe them as a baby? Because like we, and my parents taught me this, we have poured water right onto Maddox's face since day one, like literally day one. And obviously when he was like a newborn, it was like, maybe more we let like a gentle trickle go down his face, but we've never blocked it. We've never done the whole tilt your head back for me to just, you know, rinse your hair thing. And my dad had told me, and like, none of this is science fact. This is just literally my dad told me this. And so I practiced the same philosophy because it made sense to me. You know, he told me that if you think about it, like when you're in utero, you're like in liquid. So like you're born with the instinct to hold your breath. But if that instinct isn't carried on, then you have to relearn it later, right? So I always connected it more like that. But it is an interesting question you pose, because like if you don't like that naturally, whether it's like maybe it's a genetic thing or is it a learned thing because she sees what you do and more? I'm not sure. Well,
okay, here's the thing. I think it's a learned thing. I keep thinking back of like, okay, I know Margo has never really liked water being poured on her head that much. And so thinking back, like, you know, at what point did that happen? And when did, you know, different things develop? Because, you know, we've tried to like, we've generally, taken the kids in the shower with us. And I think part of it though was, you know, she was born in 2021. So she wasn't, because of the pandemic, we probably weren't taking her to the pool that much as a baby. Whereas Ollie, like, you know, we put him underwater as a baby and all of that type of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But because when I get water on my face, you know, I have to like wipe it before I'll open my eyes. At some point, I started doing that with Ollie and calling it a face squeegee. Where like he would be frustrated, and it might have been more with like, you know, I don't know if it related to there being soap and like whatever, but like,
right.
So he would like, his face would get wet and I'd be like, oh, do you need a face squeegee? And so I would like wipe, you know, do the thing I do to my face, but for him. And so then I'm sure I started doing that with Margo when she was even younger, because it, you know, it's like they express discomfort of the water on their face. And so I'm like, okay, I'll wipe it off for you. And so that I would say is probably my big mistake.
Yeah. But I mean, I wouldn't stress it too much, right? Because I think it's good information. Yeah, exactly. It's good information. It's good information for the teacher, maybe, like good context. Be like, okay, this is why. But it's not like if I learned, for example, in doing those lessons that a parent, you know, really babied them and never poured water on their face. I wasn't like, well, we're screwed here. I just was like, okay, I have more information. I just have more information as to why maybe it's like even more something they're not into, and we'll just have to get even more creative to work around it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I'm glad I asked, because hopefully there's a listener out there who has a newer baby who can do it right.
They can think about what they want the water habits to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which I is actually...
Sometimes I'm like, you know, it could be a little natural too. Cause like, even though we've done that with Maddox from day one, he still is not like, he'll whine almost every bath time while I'm getting his hair wet and pouring water on his face. And then again, when I'm rinsing out the shampoo, but I just let him whine cause it's done really quick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes like with the way he is, I'm like, oh, maybe he's going to be more like his dad in the water than his mom. I don't know. Like maybe he's just not going to like it as much as I do. Who knows, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Okay. But so a little bit back to my question, when you were in the water and you like, let's say you go underwater or you're in the shower or whatever, and you get water on your face, do you just, are you just able to open your eyes and it's fine? You don't have to like wipe your, like wipe the water, like squeegee the water off.
I mean, I think it's really natural to go like this sometimes, like to your eyes, you know, like wipe them and then open them. But, and I obviously, like after decades of being a swimmer, I much, much, much prefer to open my eyes with goggles on than without. Like, much prefer.
Yeah.
But, like, I'll do it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. In the shower, I mean, I can picture myself like wiping my eyes if it's just like coming down my face. I don't feel like standing under the shower head with my eyes just like
open. Just open all the time in the water. I know. I'm like, and the other thing is, you know, I used to wear contacts. So I'm like, okay, that was a little bit of an excuse. But like, maybe I should try to practice like opening my eyes underwater more with Margo, and like I can try to get more comfortable with it as well. So
I mean, when you do it a lot in the chlorine, your eyes will get irritated. So
like, it's true.
I think it's a good thing to be able to know, like, I can open my eyes, I can see if I need to, but I think there's nothing wrong with very quickly preferring goggles over doing so.
Totally. But speaking of, I feel like this is a good transition into our main topic, because I feel like I'm learning a lesson the hard way right now from making a mistake, and hopefully our listeners can learn from it. But this week we are going to be focused on some fun lessons that we learned the hard way. So let's get into that main topic. Okay, Jen. So this is something as a topic that's been on my mind for a little while, just because sometimes I'll think back on, you know, random little tiny moments that weren't that significant, but like stick with you as like an aha moment, right?
Yeah.
And so the one that was coming up in my mind is so silly. It was like, you know, I was at Stanford and I would bike commute, and like most people bike commuted on and off campus and stuff, because it was such a bike friendly spot. And great weather, you know, all of that nice stuff. And I remember, and, you know, I've always been the type of bike commuter who, like, wants to go fast, right? Like, I'm generally like to be efficient stuff like that. So I remember this time I was, like, biking home, you know, on one of the main bike routes, and was at a stoplight, stopped, and, like, you know, a friend of a friend came to the light, and then I, you know, like blew past me, or like got a better start off the line, right? Than me. And I remember that the person, like my friend, was like, oh yeah, like this guy saw you and he said that you must not have downshifted because like he got away really fast, something like that, you know, like it was commented on. And I was like, oh. Like, I don't, I feel like this cannot possibly be the first moment that I learned this lesson, but in my mind, it's the aha moment of, oh, you shift gears down before you stop at a stop sign or a light so that you can get going easier.
Sure. Then you're in a nice, easy gear to keep going. Yes. No, that's so true. And that story reminds me of like kind of two lessons I've had in that same category, actually, which one was like, I was biking with my sister and her best friend, Rachel, and they were like mostly, they didn't have nearly as much experience as me, but they were trying to keep me company when we were all in California leading into Nice. So I had like brought my bike. I needed to work out while I was there. And I was so concerned about them remembering that concept going into this one light, especially because coming out of it, or no, I was even more concerned trying to make, see if we could just make the light, but then also telling them if it starts to turn downshift, blah, blah, because it also goes into a slight uphill out of that light. Right. And then they both make the light. And not only do I not, I forgot to downshift. And I was like, almost didn't make it once it turned green again because I was struggling so much to get going. So that's like such a good one, actually. And the same thing happened to me one time when I was following two friends in Florida. There's this place we used to go out like 45 minutes to an hour from where I live because it was the one spot you could get some hill training in. I think it was probably when I was getting ready for Oceanside. And there was like one of the gentlemen who was with us is very experienced. He used to work on the XC team at Ironman and everything. And he knew the route. I didn't really know the route. I was more like following. And we came off this crazy downhill right into a turn left on a road that was like a straight uphill. And I had not like prepared my gears at all. And he literally had to like push and help get me going and then start the uphill for himself from a dead stop, but like he was so strong he could, but like so ridiculous. So I think that's so a great lesson.
Yeah, there's a spot that on one of the routes, and we did it recently on a team ride, where it's a big downhill and then you do a right and then a hard right, like right away into a very steep uphill like that. And every time I'm going down and I'm yelling at people, like, get into low gear. It's going to go straight uphill. Like, be ready, you know?
Yeah. And because sometimes it's like awkward to get into a low gear while you're carrying speed downhill, right? Like, it can be tricky. That is funny.
Oh yeah, gosh, and it is. Yeah, it's funny trying to find like that right gear so that once you hit the, because you can still continue to downshift once you hit the hill, but like you, because if it's too low, then you're like can't even press on the pedals, right? So it is. It's fun, like learning. Honestly, like learning shifting on your bike is, I don't know, like a fun, interesting thing that is sort of tricky. And I remember like Ironman Wisconsin, it's one of the things that I actually view as like one of my big strengths in cycling is the ability to ride like rolling hills, which is very much what Ironman Wisconsin was. And like just that natural sense. And also like it's, to me, it's like the best way to play on a bike, right? Is like carry the speed in and then even try to like see how much you can like make it on the uphill, like just with your momentum or like, you know, slingshotting off of people. And so another story or lesson that I was going to share that it reminds me of that I learned from my coach at Stanford, Bruce. He was, you know, like, as I started thinking about these lessons and stuff, I was thinking about a lot of these group rides where Bruce would be riding like next to me and giving me pointers, giving me tips around like descending and going around corners. Cause all of that time at Stanford was like learning how to ride hills for me. Right. Cause like nothing is like that in Wisconsin. And, you know, he would tell me stuff about, you know, look through the corner. Like you want to look at basically the farthest point of a corner. That was really helpful. And I just remember this one specific, there was this climb out, you know, it was on like sort of our main loop, the Portola Valley loop, and you would be going up this hill and then it's sort of to get out to like any of the great rides. Like, oh man, I miss it. and I remember him teaching me and like reminding me that basically, you know, the hill does not stop at the top of the climb. The hill it basically stops once you start descending and gain your momentum and essentially, right, carry your speed over the top until you're at speed going down the other side, right? And I just think about that all the time. And I love those moments where you can like tie it back to a specific coach and a thing that they taught you. And then you're like in races or you're in riding and you're like, I know where I learned that. I know who taught me that. And it's just really fun.
Picture the exact same person telling you because the same friend, Frankie, who had to help push me up that hill, basically taught me that same concept you're talking about right now too, which was, he was always like, finish the hill, Jen, you got to keep going. Like you got to go all the way over it. You know, that's to your point. It's like over the hill, not just to the top. And any race I did after that with a climb or even just ride, it's like, it's now Frankie in my head saying,
yeah,
finish over the hill. Like,
yeah.
So yeah. Funny how that works. So good. But I love it.
I love it too. Yeah. It's just, it's like that little person there. Like, you know, I still have it from my high school running coach because of a couple of things that he would say to me. One was he would say, like, run like I'm pushing you. Cause sometimes, like, literally, you know, I mean, even in running, right? I don't know exactly how much there's drafting, but like when you start to fall off that mental, like, oh, I'm not with the group anymore, like, it just is really hard to keep a pace or to stick with them. And that would happen to me. I was like, right. I was top JV, bottom varsity. So I was right on that cusp. So I'd be out for a run and like getting tired and having trouble staying with the varsity girls. And my coach would come and like push me back up and it's like, stay in the group, you know? And so in races, he would say, run like I'm pushing you.
Yeah.
And then the other funny thing that I remember from him is that he would call like the little hills in cross country, like, it, just like running over a zit, which is just funny and random.
Yeah.
Like one of those weird things.
But probably, yeah, one of those weird things that pops into your mind when you're running over little hills.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
One other big one that I learned in the hills in California from, you know, being on the Stanford Tri team, and this was definitely a lesson learned the hard way, was I was on this ride with friends, and first of all, we're going up this climb and we see a coyote in the middle of the road, which freaks me out because I'm like, is this, you know, this thing is standing there looking at us, and like they ride past it and ahead, and I just like have visions of this thing running toward. And I swear when I started riding past that coyote, I swear it started like, you know, running over towards me a little bit, like slowly. And so I went past it, turned the corner. I was like with my friends, of course, like, I don't know, a couple guys, and I was like crying because I was like, oh my God, it was coming for me. Like I was freaked out. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then because of that, you know, I'm having like a physiological response. Like my hands started getting really sweaty and stuff. And I definitely noticed it. And like I've never ridden with gloves. I've just never liked the feel. And I still feel like maybe I should start trying more. And I did a little bit in cyclocross, but anyway, at that time, I didn't ride with gloves. And so then we just climbed up a big climb. So now we are descending and a lot of switchbacks and all of that. And I was descending on the hoods of my bike, you know, just the regular like part of the road bike handlebar by the brakes. And my hand, which was sweaty as I was braking into a corner, slid off the top.
Oh, geez.
And I fell. And that is sort of my first like significant bike crash. And it was really just road rash, like, I was fine. I called, of course, they were ahead of me because I was behind on the descent. And like, I called out like so that they would hear me and come back. And they did. And it was all good. But then, like, one of the guys I was on the ride with, he was the president of the tri team at the time. And for the tri team, the president is always considered the safety coordinator. So after this ride, he like goes to the whole team. It might have been in an email or something. And he's basically like, yeah, everyone, make sure that you're always descending in the drops, because then, you know, you can't really slide off the drops as much, like, right? Uh-huh. So he was basically like, oh, this is a safety thing, like, not like you should have known, but like, oh, I should make sure everyone learns from this.
Yeah, yeah.
From your crash. So it was a little bit embarrassing. And now I still wonder, like, I mean, I think about that, and certainly, you know, if your hands are sweaty or in different cases, like, and not only are the drops good for helping, you know, have maybe a better grip, but also your center of gravity is lower, which I think helps with descending, right?
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I learned it the hard way because I crashed, and also felt like it was a little bit of an example
made
of it. But yeah, that's another one.
Yeah, no, that is good. I never thought about like getting sweaty and slipping off. I know my coach when I lived in Texas really always emphasized riding in the drops. She told me that you have like more control, and like she would show me how you could like literally like lift and move your bike when you're in the drops more than if you're like up here. And so then that helped me because when I was a newer like road bike rider, I was always like more scared on the bike, right? Like running and swimming just weren't scary to me, right? Like you're not up off the ground. You don't have this piece of equipment between you and the ground. And so that always helped me like overcome my fear a little bit because I was like, well, control is what I want because that's part of why I'm scared is I feel out of control. And so it makes sense that while sweaty, that would play a factor as well.
Yeah. And I still wonder, like I've given other people that tip, like, oh, like descending in, like it can be good to descend in the drops. But then I see a lot of people not descending in the drops. So I'm like, okay, it's certainly not like a hard and fast rule. It's not right. like you're dumb if you don't, right?
So yeah.
I don't know. I'm like not exactly sure what I make of it at this point. I'll be curious for my coach to share his feedback when he listens to this episode.
yeah. Let us know. Report back next week. That's funny. Well, speaking of bike stuff, one lesson that I learned, and I don't know fully what I would take away from this other than like, you know, really going over all of your stuff, I guess, further out leading up to a race. But basically, when I went to Steelhead in 2019, so flew to Michigan from Florida, I had realized like a day or two before we were leaving that my bike computer wasn't like calibrating anymore. Like, and then Devin noticed when we got there, I had just been making comments like, oh, it's not really working. And then I didn't like fully investigate it. And then he noticed when we got there that like part of my magnet was like broken or missing or something. Oh. I can't remember exactly. This was a while ago, you know, but we went to like all the different vendors trying to see if there were any parts and stuff. And he got what he thought was like the right part and everything. And we had me set up for race day. Then when I got out on the bike, it wasn't working. And so I remember just like, you know, there was a clock still on my bike computer and I didn't have a watch on. Like this was pre-Jen owning, like I wear Polar specifically, but didn't have a Polar Garmin or anything yet, you know? And, I remember like when I got to the first 5 mile marker, I think it's every 5 miles, they have a flag at 70.3 courses being like, okay, what time is it on the clock? And then when I got to the 10 one, like literally doing math in my head to gauge approximately like how fast I was going so that I had some semblance of like, is this a good pace for me? How do I feel? Do I think I could push it more? And so I think the lesson there is just like really like checking in on your equipment and like not putting things off. And I think in triathlon, like I feel like there's different categories of people and some people are just so in tune with like everything about their bikes, right? There's those people and maybe you fall a little more into this category, Amy. I don't know. You can tell us, but like, and they're good about cleaning their bikes and they know all the mechanics. And I'm like on the opposite end of the spectrum, but I strive to, like, I want to be that person who knows everything about my bike and like cleans it regularly and like could one day do my complete own tune up or something. But I'm like so far removed from that. And it is important because like in swimming and running, there's only so much gear you need, right? But the gear doesn't even fully determine like your ability to literally like go, but like, if you're missing something or something's off on your bike, you could like really, really, really mess up your whole day.
You know? Yeah. And including, you know, your body, like you could crash. Exactly. Like there's some serious issues that can come up. Yeah. Oh, the bike stuff is so tricky. Like, you know, I love thinking about like, oh, if I actually think about what I know, like I've learned a lot more. Like I am better at cleaning my bike. I clean my bikes more often. But like, I just find all that stuff so stressful and like, you know, even, adjusting, you know, sometimes I've used the barrel adjuster for like shifting and stuff, but like, I don't, sometimes it just feels like you can't get it right. And it's like, once you touch it, then it's wrong. And like, you just can't figure it out. And it's, I feel like with some of that, like, especially the barrel adjuster, for example, if your shifting is slightly off and so you try to like get it so that it's the rear derailleur is moving better, like I just feel like a lot of that is the practice and repetition, and you're not necessarily getting that on your own bike. So it's like, and it's like intimidating. So then it's sort of hard to actually invest in like learning it and getting better.
Yeah. But it does make then sense because like someone who works at a bike shop, even if no matter how good they are doing it on their own regularly or not, is like, yeah, they're still getting repetition because like part of their job. But
yeah.
I mean, I took apart and put together my own bike to like, you know, put it in the bike box to go to Alaska. When I got there, I built it back myself. So like,
that's amazing.
I don't feel like I know nothing, but I remember thinking like, okay, I need to set aside hours to do this. Like, this is not going to happen quickly. I need to like eliminate as much stress as possible. So I don't want to be under time pressure. And I remember really trying to walk through each step slowly, but not necessarily even once it was built, like having full confidence. Like, did I get it all put back together right?
I know. And honestly, yeah, I need to learn how to take my bike apart and put it together. I took my bike apart for, I think my brother helped teach me how to do it for one of my races. And then maybe like the first Kona. Yeah, that makes sense. The first time I went to Kona, I think my brother was like in California, like living in the same apartment as us, and he helped me do it. And then I had a shop put it back together because I was like, I don't want to mess it up when you put it together, right?
Yeah.
If I don't have someone there, if it's the first time. And then I probably the same thing when I got home. I don't know. I don't feel like I've ever put my bike back together. Anyway, the second time I went to Kona, luckily we got there, you know, a little like just about a week ahead of time. And I took it all apart myself. And as I'm taking it apart, some part was like messed up. I remember having to go to a Trek store to get something. And I don't remember what it was. You know what it was? I don't think I could get something off of the bike. Like something was too tight on the rear derailleur or something. And I was a little bit confused. Anyway, in this confusion, at some point, I lost the specialty bike clamp for my seat post for my Trek Speed Concept, which is one of those pieces that like goes in your frame. It's this very, very specialty piece that like, if you don't have it, you're basically screwed because your seat post won't stay in place. So I get to Hawaii and I have Velofix come and he's putting my bike together and he's like, yeah, you are missing this part and I can't finish putting your bike together. And so we go to the Trek store and it was pretty like, of course, I'm in an absolute panic and it's like not in the box. It's not anywhere. And like, I have no memory. Like I think I dropped it in the street outside my house. I don't know. I got so confused of like what happened to this piece because I never found it. And so then I went to the Trek store and it turns out someone else had also lost that piece. Actually, it might have fallen into the bike. I think that was part of it, was like it could fall into the bike, but I think they tried to look. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
So someone else had also lost it and they just ordered like a backup one to be sent to the island, right? On like fast shipping. And so they added one into the package for me. And then we were able to split shipping, which was great because it was like speed shipping to Hawaii. And so I got my bike a couple days before, but it's exactly what you're saying. It's like when stuff gets to the technical bike stuff, do not put it off to the last second and just be prepared for like stuff to go wrong, I guess.
Well, I'm really glad that you were able to figure that out and that they were able to send you a piece in time, because I know I would have been really stressed waiting for that.
I know. I was like, am I going to have to rent a TT bike? Like all this stuff. But another backup plan, there was a mechanic on the island who I knew from Portland, and he told me he had my bike this whole time. And then he told me he like fashioned a piece that would essentially hold, you know, the seat post up if I needed it in the end. So I don't know like how true that was or how good that was going to be. And like, that could be really bad if it went wrong for an Ironman, but at least it was like, okay, like there's backup plans and yeah.
So. Well, I can definitely relate to like the scramble of having to figure something out literally once you've already arrived at like a destination race. And I feel like I've potentially touched on this story before on the podcast, maybe, but when I went to 70.3 Steelhead in 2019, you know, I did my bike through Tri-Bike Transport. And the one thing they do is they take your pedals off, or you take them off before you even turn it in, whatever. And they're like, you're responsible for bringing your pedals to the race, right? And Devin and I were flying into Chicago. And when we landed, I don't know why it hit me at that moment, but like literally as the airplane wheels touched the tarmac, oh. I was like, and Devin was like, what? And I was like, oh, no. I don't think I have my pedals. And it was so crazy. And so we were like landing in Chicago with a little bit of a drive ahead of us to get to Benton Harbor, Michigan. And I just went into like full scramble mode. And I will say, this is one of those times where there was luck involved, but also being an Ironman employee helped. But so what I did immediately was I called my friend Sawyer, who's now husband, but boyfriend at the time, was like one of our head like VIP guys for Ironman. And I knew he wasn't at this race, but he'd know people that was at the race because he worked a ton of races, knew everyone that like was operationally involved, right? And I was like, you guys, I forgot my pedals. Like, does Tim know anyone who's already there? Can I find out if like the bike shop there is selling the right pedals? And I use Speedplay. So I was like, I doubt they are, but like, let's find out. And then I was like Googling bike shops along the way and what time they opened to be like, okay, do we need to stop and wait in a certain city for a bike shop to open? And like, will they even have Speedplay? Can I tell from their websites or not? And so after I got off the phone with him, I was doing that. And then Tim had proceeded to like call who he had working VIP locally for that race. And they headed over to the bike shop to look for me. And then what ended up happening and what ended up being my solve was he called me back literally like only 15 or 20 minutes later. Like we were just getting off the plane and it was already all solved, but like it could have been more disastrous.
Yeah.
Was the VIP lady who walked over to the bike shop and was inquiring about pedals, a local person who wasn't planning on racing but was going to be volunteering overheard them and was like, my bike in my garage has Speedplay pedals on it. I'm not racing this weekend. I'm just going to be volunteering. I'd be happy to bring my pedals. And so I never had met this person, but like finally got to Benton Harbor, I went to VIP and she had them in a bag for me and I like gave them back there. At the end of the race, like we ended up having each other's numbers. So I was able to text her and be like, your pedals have been returned to VIP, but we ourselves didn't connect. But it was like I said, it was really lucky that it got solved so quickly, but it was full panic mode for that, like, I don't know, maybe half hour total. And I will say, there is something to be said about like, the way your cleats click into your pedals. So like I was having trouble when I first started riding at getting my foot like to kick out enough to get out. And that did come into play on race day because I almost fell over at the dismount line.
No.
So my calf was like practically cramping and I couldn't quite kick out enough. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like literally looking at one of the volunteers who was by the dismount line being like, I might go down.
Especially because it's the dismount line. Like if you actually go over that, I mean, are you allowed to like, run back, you know, go back and get off again or something?
I know. But yeah, it was like so funny, but just, another one of those examples of like, you know, parts or whatever missing and like lesson learned, because you better believe it. Like pedals in all caps highlighted was from then on my packing list, like with exclamation points and
I know, everything. Normally it's not something you have to account for in the same way, you know, like normally it's like your bike, either on your bike or at least like packed with it. That's a tricky one. Oh my gosh, I love that. And I love, like, I'm trying to think of like, what is the psychology that does that, where it's like remembering something you forgot on a road trip or anything, it's always like at some point it just like
boom, it's it hits you. And it hits you. Yeah. Intensity.
Such intensity. I literally audibly gasped, and Devin looked at me like, what? Yeah. I was like, my fat almost like I just knew. Like
you had a
not
premonition.
Like I was digging through a bag and was like, they're not here. I just knew.
Right. Oh my gosh. It's a funny one. Yeah.
Yeah. So funny.
Yeah. So definitely. Man, that's one of the tricky things about triathlon is just like all the stuff to keep track of.
Yeah.
And knowing, I mean, both of those stories have so much of the good problem solving, you know, just like that's what's nice is like you can have that moment of panic, but then it's like, all right, now what is the game plan? What's the list that we're ticking off? Like there's like so many different ways to solve it typically if you have time.
Yes.
You realize with enough time. So yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Well, and I always wished I could go back and tell that lady, like, that's where I qualified for Nice. So I'm like, imagine if I hadn't been able to race or like, I don't know if I'd had to learn to use a whole nother pedal, which like, I'm sure it all could have been okay. But it, you know, it was like a lot of little factors that came together and ended up, you know, leading to me going to Nice. So,
yeah. And that's a good, I mean, that's actually a really good tip for anyone is like, I've seen that before on different Facebook groups or things of like people where it's like, hey, this person is in town and like they need this item. Can we like crowdsource from the community to find it or like find help in a different way?
Speaking of like bike parts, I feel like the bike is where there's so much room for like things to go wrong potentially. Mm-hmm. But like both bike parts and then also like gear is what this makes me think of just generally. Like a lesson that I feel like I've learned is checking your gear that you haven't used in a while. And like particularly where this came to play for me was Ironman Alaska. Like I lived somewhere warm. So all my like cold weather stuff wasn't really in use for training for Alaska. But then I was going to need like all the cold weather things like on race day. And when I put my wetsuit on, I actually like had a spot where my fingernail almost went completely through it. And it was like this really thinning spot. And I had used my wetsuit for several seasons at that point. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking like, if I'm in Juneau, Alaska, like the chance, like, yes, there's the Ironman stuff, but who knows if they would even have my exact size or anything like that. Like, imagine being stuck with something like without something like a wetsuit in a 50 something degree race. Like that would have been horrible, you know? And like, yeah, you can try to patch it, try to do something temporarily, swim with a little hole. But like, I just remember looking at that spot and thinking this could have turned into a complete disaster and wishing like I had paid more attention throughout the summer or like, you know, even put on my wetsuit a couple times in the house to know how it was feeling and how it was looking. Because maybe
so was
I would
have in Alaska when you were trying it on already.
Yeah. I was already in Alaska and I'm like, if I had known that there was a thinning spot like that, I think I would have just bit the bullet and bought a new one knowing it would get uses in the future too, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that that's like something to remember too. And like, you know, that could have been a much harder lesson learned. Like, luckily it was okay, but still a lesson learned, still a note for the future to not even let like that small moment of like, oh no, exist at
totally.
All, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. One of my big lessons with wetsuits is just like my wetsuit, at least, and I think most of them just take so long to get on, you know? And so it's just always like, I've definitely remember learning this at the start of Ironman Wisconsin, which at the time was an in-water like mass start still. But it's like getting the wetsuit on in advance. And I mean, I had enough time, you know, but I was definitely feeling the time pressure and feeling a little bit rushed and like I should have started a little sooner. And so I think I've gotten better over time of like getting my wetsuit on earlier. But that's a big one. It's just like, oh man, it takes so long to get a wetsuit on, especially if you're avoiding like putting holes in it, right?
Yeah. You're trying to put it on carefully.
Like, pull it gentle. Yeah. And then, oh my God, I can't even remember when I've learned this, but learning that one of the most important spots to put Body Glide is on the back of the neck. right? Like, yeah. I have had a quarter size full on scab from, yeah. I probably got it from Iron Man Wisconsin. Like, just, and I think part of it too is like the way that the Velcro covers, and if you don't have it fully like attached, then maybe you have a little bit of the Velcro rubbing there. So it's worse yeah. than just like, right? Like the normal. Yeah. chafing, and you're looking up because you're sighting, and so you're like rubbing it a bunch, and oh my gosh, showering after an Ironman is so yes. painful.
Yes.
You find out where all the chafing is.
You find all the spots, even if you didn't notice any during the race. I've had yep. wetsuit neck chafe too. Mine was like a little more on like the sides of the mm-hmm. back, but yeah, I just like don't leave any room for error there now. What I do is I hand mine to Devin and I walk up to him and he just like lubes up the entire 360 of my neck, like in a, like a oh 5-inch like yeah. vertical like situation. Cause it's like, there's no yeah. room for the chafing. thing. But you're yeah. right about that post Ironman shower. I learned that for me, a spot I chafe a lot is like at the bottom where my sports bra, like,
oh.
sits underneath, like at the top of my belly, bottom of my chest, I guess.
Yeah.
I the sports
bra chafing is definitely my
had opinion. Zero cool. clue and like got in the shower after Ironman Florida and like oh, faced the water no. and was like, oh, what is that? So oh like gosh. That's a spot. And I always get to where my
kit, say the zipper.
Yeah, where and no matter even if it's kind that has good fabric over it or yes. not. And I think it doesn't happen or it gets only like close to happening for me in a 70.3 distance. I think it's truly for me, mostly the running of the entire marathon is that it's almost like yeah. bouncing maybe slightly right there or something. And your
yeah.
skin is so thin. True. I feel like on your chest right there. So I get that spot and I do yeah. not have a solve for that yet.
Well, I have a potential solution that I use. Okay.
Yeah.
I always unzip my suit to the sports bra so that the okay. zipper is sitting on the sports bra. And then, you know, you can zip it up before you finish or whatever. And that's not, right. I mean, that's nowhere near the belly button, you know, the rules, yeah. like you're totally within the rules, but I'm just like, I can't have that extra mass of the zipper. And then, you know, of course it comes apart and like, that I think has worked for me. So
okay. Yeah. I'm going to have to give that a go because that has been my spot that just, yeah, does not feel good after a race.
Yeah. I unfortunately had to learn this chafing lesson the last two seasons, but I got this, a new, you know, race kit that I've been using for triathlon. That is my Zwift team. And yeah. so that's what I've been wearing the last couple of races. And I don't know if it's the size of that kit. I feel like it's maybe a little bit too small, but also like where the seams are on my thighs and stuff. But I get the worst chafing. And the last time I wore it, I was like, Nick, never let me wear this sweatsuit again. Or sorry, this like race suit again, because I had, you know, you took like lessons learned the hard way. Well, I totally forgot how bad the chafing was right on those lines. And I trained. You know, I think I did some workouts in it because, again, yeah. you know, you should try out your stuff. But like you say, I mean, it's just not the same as race day when you like fully go for the long run and you're wet yeah. and going hard. And I was like, I am never wearing this one again. Like the chafing was too bad. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have we talked about this before on the podcast? Do you put on sunscreen on race day? Do you do it in T1 or T2 at all? Like, have you ever gotten a really bad sunburn on race day?
Oh, so many bad ones. I think we did talk about it in our transition episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And yeah, my main thing is, you know, I'll put it on before the whole race. So yeah, put it on before getting my wetsuit on. And then if I see the people, like what I've generally done is if I see people with gloves and sunscreen from in T2, right, from yeah. bike to run, then I'll go over there and get it. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the last time I did Kona or one of the times I did it where I think it was the first time I missed the, honestly, I think every time I've done Kona, I've gotten pretty bad sun.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's such a long day. The sun is so extreme. And yeah. like, you just don't want to set for sunscreen there. You know?
I know. That's what I was going to say too, is like, some people might be like, oh, it's worth it like depending on how competitive you are for like, you know, one sunburn. But I had a race where my sunburn was pretty bad and I didn't see them. And like, I think Devin or someone, or maybe someone from work, you know, at the time told me like, yeah, we definitely had sunscreeners at that race. And I was like, I don't know how I missed them because, but I'm not fully convinced it was only on the run anyway, because it was like that top forearm part that you like can get when you're in like arrow on your bike. And it's just that part of the forearm that's like facing up the whole time.
That's so funny. Yeah.
So I was like, maybe it mostly happened on the bike that day anyway. Right. I don't know. But I remember just being like, oh, maybe I need to keep my own at my own station because I don't think, unless I knew I was like maybe truly neck and neck with someone, that I would want to miss out on that sunscreen again.
No. Yeah. It's really not. It doesn't take that long to put on and it's probably worth it.
Well, because you can just goop it and run. Yeah. And, totally, you know, rub as you run. Yeah.
Yeah. Get one of those little like, you know, toss away packs, you know, single use, and then just do it like a goo.
Yeah.
Just don't mix them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the other lesson from Kona, from the last one, Nick was like, you are never racing a triathlon without sleeves, with, you know, a tri-suit that is not sleeved again. So that was Nick's lesson learned. So for me, So then I had to make sure that I got ones with sleeves for my last few seasons.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. Okay. One other, this is sort of a random one, but I just think it's too, I just have to ask. Okay.
Okay.
Because the story is so funny. So I was with, you know, I had a really good friend, Simon, and, you know, we would train together a bunch, like a few years ago for triathlon stuff. And we would do our weekly track workouts with the Portland Triathlon Club. And I remember being at one of those and it was winter and we were both wearing leggings. And the topic came up of like, do you wear underwear under your leggings or not? And at that time I was like, oh yeah, like, of course you don't, like, you're not supposed to wear underwear under your leggings. Like, that's weird. And Simon was like, oh really? I always wear underwear under my leggings. And so we just had this conversation. And then, you know, for the next year, I was like, oh, like from then on, I wore underwear under my leggings. I was like, oh, I guess like it's, you're supposed to, or it's normal or whatever. And then like, I swear, I think it was like a year later, it came up again and we had both switched.
Oh my gosh.
So she stopped wearing underwear. She was like, oh, we had that conversation. We both switched doing it. I don't know what she does these days, but now I always wear it. And honestly, like, even though underwear, I don't know how it works. I don't know, like, if it makes any sense, but I actually feel like I had more like chafing issues with the leggings, like in between my thighs when I didn't wear underwear. And then I feel like that solved it, which it's not like, I don't know. We don't have to get that deep into it, but like, anyway, I think it's better with the underwear. But do you wear underwear under your leggings?
So are we talking like are we talking general legging use? Are we talking running? What are we talking?
I would be curious about both, but let's say we're talking running right now.
I feel like if we're talking running, my answer is actually not always for running, but for general daily use, I have found like my favorite pair of like thong to wear with like high-waisted leggings that I like.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that. And then I feel like with strength training, I also don't always wear underwear under my leggings.
Okay.
Because
interesting.
I just feel like it moves sometimes and I get annoyed and then I'm trying to adjust it.
Totally.
And I don't want to be thinking about that during a workout. I also have like, I don't know if my answer would be different if I was working out in a public gym more often. I might be like more inclined to wear underwear just in case, like, I don't know, they're a little see-through, I didn't know, or whatever.
Right.
But I'm working out in my garage, so it's not a big deal. But yeah, so mine's actually like situational.
Yeah, that is interesting. I know, like, and of course with like running shorts, I wear underwear if I'm wearing them just like daily, you know, use, just wearing them around the house and stuff. But then if I'm going to run, like I have to take the underwear off because they have, you know, the built-in and like, I find that's much better. Like I could not run with, I think I've run with underwear in running shorts before and it's like really uncomfortable. But yeah, with leggings, now I've switched. So it's good to know. There's no right answer.
No. Yeah. I think that definitely is a personal preference, but there is a right answer when it comes to bike shorts. And I have friends that have learned that the hard way.
I was thinking that. So for our listeners, the right answer is no, you do not wear underwear with bike shorts. And it really, I'm pretty sure, I think I've done in the beginning, like a ride or two where I had underwear and then I was like, this doesn't seem right.
I think one of my sisters, like when her college, I think Whitney, when her college swim team was doing like spin classes in the fall, which my team used to do too, actually, I guess it's common like cross training.
Oh, yeah.
And she didn't own bike shorts at first, but my dad sent her some and she like didn't give him details, but was like, I'm still having issues, not being quite comfortable. And he was like, all right, you probably don't want your dad asking this, but like, are you wearing underwear? You shouldn't be. And like let me confirm. And like she was. And that helped a lot to not wear underwear with like, you know, you got the chamois or the pad or whatever in there and everything.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
need to reduce as much movement as you can, right?
Yes.
So it's like if you have the underwear, then those can move and then the chamois can move. And so you're just adding more friction.
More friction. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. One other totally random one, but just like, as we talk about this topic comes to mind is in my first Ironman, for one, just learning like to actually slow down when you're going through a bike aid station, to grab stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's just really annoying if you miss bottles and you're like, you know, so it's worth it to slow down. But I remember in that first race grabbing a banana. And so how do you get a banana in a bike aid station? It's like cut in half, right? So I thought, just like eat it like a goose. So I like stick it in my mouth, sort of put my teeth around the peel. And I'm thinking, oh, just sort of squeeze out, bite out the banana. But the peel of a banana is just like bitter and gross, and biting into it like that, I got that flavor in my mouth and it's like, I don't know, it tastes like you're eating fiber. Like, it's just weird.
It like leaves like, feeling on your teeth. Yeah, I feel like. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
It was awful. So I remember that as a lesson that I learned.
So do you still grab bananas and just try to peel them while you're on the bike, or have you refrained from grabbing bananas on the bike?
That's a good point. No, I don't really think I eat bananas on the bike. Like, I'll take them on training rides and stuff for sure. But in Ironman races, I pretty much stuck to like, especially because honestly, like trying to go through the aid station faster, I'm like, well, if listeners don't remember my last 70.3, I didn't take anything from any of the bike aid stations. That didn't turn out great. So, but clearly I'm trying to get as little stuff as I can. And, you know, like in Kona, it's very much like get a water, dump it on yourself, get a water, put it on your bike. Like, you're just trying to get so many fluids. Like, there's not bananas.
Yeah. I feel totally. And I feel like that's another point too for like, not only how you mentioned slowing down, but attempting to get what you needed towards the beginning. Because if you've slowed down, but you're not planning on stopping, if you miss that first person trying to hand you the water, you know, you have a couple more tables maybe to try.
So true.
Or if you're trying to get two for different reasons, like dumping on yourself and one to refill your bottles or throw on your bike, like, I try to do that. If it's not super crowded, not impacted, and I have the ability to kind of choose when to go, I try to go as close to the front of the aid station to leave myself room for error.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Well, are there any other lessons you can think of?
I think that covers like pretty much what I had in mind. I'm sure we'd love to hear from the listeners too, if they have any fun ones, or maybe they weren't fun in the moment, difficult lessons learned, any cautionary tales, you know, but
yes, please write in on our Instagram post for this episode. We will specifically call for folks to share lessons, because I would love to hear them. It'd be very fun.
Yeah.
Well, with that, let's get into our closing segment, our Go Mamas of the Week.
Go Mama. Go Mama. Go Mama. Go Mama.
Woo-hoo. These can be any small triumph or thing that's making us happy. Jen, what's your positive this week?
Mine is about potty training and, you know, overall, Max has been doing such a good job and everything. And I think like a couple weeks ago, one of my main questions would be like, okay, like he's doing a good job, but like, how do we get to that next phase where he initiates? Cause like he wasn't having accidents, but it was like all us like checking in throughout the day. Like, do you need to go potty? Do you need to go potty? Do you need to go potty? And there's like very few examples of him like stopping playing and saying, oh, I gotta go potty, right? And basically like last weekend, and because that's obviously when I spend the most like uninterrupted time with him, and all this weekend, like last weekend he started doing it. This weekend I don't think I even really had to check in with him almost at all. I think like leaving the house for an errand, I still was like, hey, do you need to go potty before we leave? But otherwise, like he was telling me every single time, and it's, I don't know, it just makes me happy because, you know, sometimes when you're in certain like phases or little training phases with your kids on like trying to accomplish some new developmental thing, you can feel like, oh, will we ever be out of this phase? And I couldn't, not that I like literally thought of it quite that dramatically, but I couldn't really see, because I was like, okay, Max is really smart, but he's not making that connection yet. Like, how and when will he just start doing that? And like, how long are we going to have to just remember every hour and a half, every weekend, prompt him all weekend long or whatever, you know, to be like, do you need to go? Yeah. Do you need to go? And so when he started doing it on his own, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so nice. Like, I don't have to think of it 24/7. So I'm proud of him for that.
That's so cool. That's awesome. And then I was also wondering, because you were talking about the leaving for errands and stuff, right?
Yeah.
How has it been going with, is he more open to going on the potty before he leaves, or now do you like trust him more? So if he says no, then it's more okay.
Yeah. It's kind of a combination. If I ask him and he says, no, I don't need to go potty, then, and I can think like, you know, it really wasn't that long since he last went. I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm going to trust you. You know, we're going to just go. And if it's been a long time, then I might try to be like, well, can you just go sit on it just for a minute for mommy so we can, you know, make sure that you don't have to go. Like, mom's going to go to the bathroom too before we leave the house, you know? And if it's been a while, I try to like push him a little more. But overall, I am inclined to like trust him because he's doing such a good job. I have had like changes of clothes and everything with us for every outing. And we haven't had to switch outfits on an outing. We haven't had, I know some kids are really like not into going on like a public toilet, which can present an issue.
Uh-huh.
We haven't had that issue. Like he's been going on public toilets if need be, you know, if we're at a restaurant or something. So I think that gives me peace of mind too, that I'm not going to end up in a situation where he tells me he has to go, but isn't going to want to use like that toilet or something.
Exactly.
Cause then I think I would be even, you know, more like, okay, well, how long are we going to be gone? You need to go.
Yeah.
So yeah, overall, I mean, he really is doing good and I do trust him. So yeah.
Yay. That's awesome.
Yeah. What's your go mama this week, Amy?
Is it okay if I do two?
Yeah, of course. We'd love to hear the positive news.
Well, my first one, because I also could have mentioned this as my what's been going on, but I got to be on someone else's podcast this week.
Oh!
So I got to be on the Where Your Feet Take You podcast, which is led by Kayla Bowker, who we had her on the show recently, and it was really fun. You know, she asked a lot of questions about like redefining myself, the whole shift from, you know, triathlon to cycling. And it was really fun to like think back and like reflect on that process. I really liked the questions that she asked. And then we also talked a lot about the new bike team Valkyrie, which has been, you know, going so well. And so that came out today actually.
Oh, okay. I saw it today.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to share it. We'll share it on our Instagram and stuff. But if anyone is interested, you can always listen to that. Our listeners might know, you know, a lot of it, but I don't know. It'll be fun. So my other one is that this week, you know, so Nick works, he goes to the office like 5 days a week now. He just has to go three of the 5 days, but you know, he likes to go and work from the office. And I sort of found myself, well, okay, I found myself in that neighborhood on Tuesday because I had a meeting at Smith, one of our sponsors for the team, and it was right near his work. So I was like, hey, like messaged him just like, I'm gonna, you know, do you want to grab coffee? And so we went and got coffee. And then later in the week, I took Cass and Margo to OMSI, the like Children's Science Museum, and that's right by his work. And I was like, hey, I'm just gonna work at a coffee shop for a couple hours if you want to meet up. And he was like, oh, do you want to grab lunch? And so then we got lunch, and it just like, it feels so fun having like little sort of midweek dates almost, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's sort of, you know, I mean, it's like how our relationship started, right? We both worked on the Stanford campus and we'd like meet up for lunch and meet up for coffee and stuff. And I just, yeah, it was really nice to be able to incorporate that back in a little bit.
Yeah, I love that. I love, Devin and I don't do it very often, but I love when he like texts me and is like, do you want to get lunch today? Do you have, you know, your lunch hour free? Because it does. It feels like a midweek date, like you're saying. And like,
yeah,
especially with kids, it's like normally you're not having any of that time unless you really pre-plan for it. So it's a nice little surprise.
Yeah, totally.
Aw, good. Well, that's it for our show this week. Thanks for listening. We are excited to continue to share our experiences of training through pregnancy, postpartum, and with young kids. New episodes come out every Friday. If you have any topics you want us to cover or any questions for us, find us on Instagram @momsoftriathlon or email us at momsoftriathlon@gmail.com.